We continue studying first canto, chapter 16, how Parikshit perceived the age of Kali. Today we're taking text 6. Atha vasya padam bhoja makaram daliham sutam kim anyai asat alapair ayuso yat asat vyaya. Okay, word by word translation. Atava, otherwise, asya, of his, Lord Krishna's, padamboja, lotus feet, makaranda liham, of those who lick the honey from such a lotus flower, satam, of those who are to exist eternally. Kim anyai, what is the use of anything else? Asat, illusory. Alapai, topics. Ayushaha, of the duration of life. Yat, that which is. Asabhyaya, unnecessary waste of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, His Confounder, Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The devotees of the Lord are accustomed to licking up the honey available from the lotus feet of the Lord. What is the use of topics which simply waste one's valuable time? Purport. Lord Krishna and His devotees are both on the transcendental plane. Therefore, the topics of Lord Krishna and of His pure devotees are equally good. The battle of Kurukshetra is full of politics and diplomacy, but because the topics are related with Lord Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita is therefore adored all over the world. There is no need to eradicate politics, economics, sociology, etc., which are mundane to the mundaners. To a pure devotee who is actually related with the Lord, such mundane things are transcendental. Be thou tailed with the Lord or with His pure devotees. We have heard and talked about the activities of the Pandavas, and we now are dealing with the topics of Maharaj Parikshit. But because all these topics are related to Lord Sri Krishna, they are all transcendental, and pure devotees have great interest in hearing them. We have already discussed this matter in connection with the prayers of Bhishmadev. Our duration of life is not very long, and therefore is no certainty of when we shall be ordered to leave everything for the next stage. Thus, it is our duty to see that not a moment of our life is wasted in topics which are not related to Lord Krishna. Any topic, however pleasant, is not worth hearing if it is devoid of its relation to Krishna. The spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal abode of Lord Krishna, is shaped like a whirl of a lotus flower. Even when the Lord descends to any one of the mundane planets, He does so by manifesting His own abode as it is. Thus His feet remain always on the same big whirl of the lotus flower. His feet are also beautiful as the lotus flower. Therefore it is said that Lord Krishna has lotus feet. A living being is eternal by constitution. He is, so to speak, in the world full of birth and death due to his own contact with material energy. Freed from such material energy, a living entity is liberated and eligible to return home back to Godhead. Those who want to live forever without changing their material bodies should not waste valuable time with topics other than those relating to Lord Krishna and His devotees. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Ena Tasmehi Shri Guruvehi Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Ena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadam Mahyam Nadati Swam Padantikam. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishavano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So in this particular verse, we reveal the consciousness of the devotees who are constantly absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that the secret of life, the mystery of life, is Krishna. If anything becomes connected to Krishna, immediately Krishna, like a touchstone, transforms whatever object it is from material object into spiritual object, simply by the presence of Krishna. So, the mundaners are looking for the philosophical stone. You know, they want to find what is this change agent that could produce gold by touching metal to it. Touchstone, you know, you can touch metal, ordinary metal, and you can get gold. So people are looking for this. So in other words, also we could say they are looking for happiness. They want to find what in life will make their life perfect. What is the actual essence in life? So everyone is absorbed to understand that. And there was a quote by John Lennon, I think, one time. They asked him, I hope I'll remember how it was going. They asked him, what is the goal of life, or what do you want to become in life? And he said that he wants to be happy. And the people were telling him that forgot the quote now. It was a very, very interesting way of his vision of the world. Basically, he was thinking the goal of life is to be happy, while the others were thinking the goal of life is to do something in the world that was probably unrelated to happiness, something along those lines. So he was thinking, you know, the goal of life is to be happy. The others were thinking the goal of life is to become something in this world, someone in this world. But he was saying they are missing the point. The goal of life is simply to be happy. But of course he didn't also know what is that foundational point, pivotal point for obtaining real happiness. Even John Lennon didn't know. And although he was exposed to Prabhupada's teachings, he was not able to accept them, and he misused his life in that way. So it is very difficult for people to understand Krishna. It's very difficult for them to understand anything, in fact. They can't understand themselves, they can't understand the world they're living in, and due to all that, there is constant confusion, there is constant struggle in this world, and a lot of pain and suffering that comes along with the misconceptions people have. So some people think work will make me happy, some people think not work will make me happy, just kind of be lazy and just avoid working and try to find happiness without being involved in this society, so on and so forth, like that. So everyone has their own perspective. But really the essence is that we have to come to the grips of reality that Krishna, or the source of everything, is a supernatural, all-powerful, transcendental person. And very naturally his name is Krishna, because Krishna means the all-attractive person. He is the summum bonum. He is the complete whole. In fact, everything is connected to him. Therefore, he is called Krishna. Just like in this material world, there are so many beautiful things, so many attractive things, so many nice things, so much wealth could be found, so much strength or wisdom or something like that. So many things that exist and are attractive to people. Mundane wisdom. But all of that in totality is in Krishna. All of this wisdom, all of this attractiveness, all of this power, beauty, etc., all in totality is combined in Krishna. And because he is the source of everything, then within the emanations of that source, you'll find all these aspects in minute quantity of beauty, power, wealth, etc. All that in minute quantity. So it is only logical that the source of everything has to be the totality of all that you see in this world. It is only natural. You cannot have the source of everything lacking something that is found in this world. You know, if you see beauty in this world, it is only logical that the source will be the source of that beauty. If you see wealth, it's only logical that the source of everything will be the source of wealth. So like that. And the devotees, they understand that the goal of life is not to find happiness on a material plane. The goal of life is not to even, you know, exist for no purpose. Like nowadays we have people who present themselves as nihilists. They think, you know, basically life has no purpose. I just live for the sake of being here, but I don't have any purpose, any goal. I'm just kind of hanging in there. So there are these kind of people. Some people are hedonists. They look for pleasure. Some are nihilists. They think, I don't care about anything. So the nihilists, they are like the mode of ignorance. Hedonists, the mode of passion. But those who are intelligent, they understand that neither the mode of passion, neither the mode of ignorance will bring happiness, satisfaction, or purpose, fulfillment in life. So those who are having that vision, they are actually considered to be very elevated individuals, because they have surpassed all the Vedic knowledge. One who accepts Krishna, is explained in Bhagavad Gita, it is a person who has surpassed all Vedic knowledge. And in that way, that means that the person is understood that this world's purpose is to connect to the source. So this is the primary purpose of life of an intelligent being. How I am going to link up myself again to the source of everything. How I will connect to the source of everything. And that requires some endeavor, that requires some practice, that requires some devotion, some investigation requires time expenditure and energy expenditure. You cannot just connect to the source of everything by wishful thinking. Even in this world, we cannot connect to anything by wishful thinking. We have to make the endeavor. And if it is meant to happen according to our karma, we will connect. So, what to speak of Shri Krishna. Therefore, in this verse, it is stated that what is the use of topics which are simply a waste of one's valuable time. So, one who is understanding that all my problems that I'm facing that I'm faced with in this material world will be reconciled simply by approaching Krishna. So that kind of person does not waste any amount of valuable time, but he or she is trying to pursue this highest goal, and they are ready to sacrifice time and energy and everything, whatever it takes to connect to the source. So, why Krishna is so special? What is it about Krishna that is so special? Here Prabhupada says in the first sentence of his purport that Lord Krishna and his devotees are both on the transcendental plane. What does it mean to be on the transcendental plane? The transcendental plane means to be on the plane of pure love, and the plane of pure love is the plane of unconditional service, devotional service. This is the transcendental plane. The mundane plane is the realm of karma, conditional service. Transcendental plane is the plane of unconditional love. So when we connect with Krishna somehow or other, by hearing or performing some other type of service, we are coming to this realm of unconditional love, and we are experiencing the happiness that is available there. This realm of unconditional love is very mystical for the mundaner. They just cannot understand that this realm can exist, just like licking the honey from the outside of the bottle, something like that. They just cannot understand how there can be another world, how there can be another reality that is beyond someone's senses. And in fact, talking about supernatural reality, not even mundane material reality that is based on chemicals and atoms and protons and neutrons and so on and so forth. So for them, this is very, very mystical, very difficult to understand. But for the devotee, they are fortunate because they are humble enough to perceive that the teachings, for example, of Krishna or his devotees in this world, they are pointing to this transcendental plane. And their behavior in this world is different from the ordinary behavior. The devotee's behavior, or even Krishna's behavior, is very different from the ordinary behavior. So, based on that, one comes to the conclusion that perhaps this transcendental realm exists, because the way the devotees who are represented in that realm, they are behaving differently from everyone else in this material world. And that is what is the greatest encouragement, or that gives the greatest faith to one individual in this material world. Just like a mundane example, if someone invests money in some business and then he gets some shares and he starts to make money, so his friend will see, my friend is making money by investing there, therefore I should invest also. He's got faith now to put his money there. Like that. By seeing his friend successful, then he also has faith. So similarly, when we meet a devotee, and when we see that they are different from the ordinary person, In other words, the devotee is caring, compassionate, considerate, sensitive. Also, they seem to know what they are doing. And their answers are always very clear about life and purpose, etc. Compared to the answers of those who are interested in materialistic science or materialistic philosophy. So in that way, when we meet the devotee, and by their behavior and by their words, we become convinced that perhaps whatever it is explained in the Shastra is true. So therefore, the devotees and Krishna, both of them on transcendental plane. You cannot really understand the spiritual world unless you meet the devotee or unless you meet Krishna. So to meet Krishna is probably most improbable, because Krishna doesn't appear very easily in front of everyone. But the devotees are considered to be even more merciful than him, because they are traversing the whole world, appearing before everyone. Even the greatest demons, the devotees will approach them to try to give them some knowledge about the purpose of life. So this is transcendental plane. Transcendental plane means to understand that we are part and parcel of the whole, and that our function is to serve the whole. This is the transcendental plane. And without any expectations, of course, for material gain, name and fame and all these things. Now, devotees, you can examine the behavior of devotees of Krishna. They may be abused, they may have unfortunate incidents, they'll never give up their service to Krishna. A mandana who works for a company and is doing service for the company, say the company is one, a whole, a small whole. And then the mandana is working in the company and he is also doing the same, the part is serving the whole, right? But if they stop paying him, he'll just give up. He won't serve anymore the whole. That's the difference between a devotee and a mandana. The devotee, you may beat him, you may do whatever you want, he'll never give up his service to Krishna. It may be even detrimental to their own physical state, this body or whatever. The devotees will never budge from that relationship with Krishna. For example, Haridas Thakur, they wanted to kill him if he doesn't stop chanting. And the proof of the transcendental plane is Haridas never gave up chanting. And not only that, he was not even angry with those who wanted to kill him. In fact, he wanted to do them a favor to save their own life. Now, this you cannot find in the material world. There's no way you can find people with that kind of consciousness. First of all, if someone puts pressure on them, they'll immediately give up what they're doing. And second of all, they will not, if they give up, they'll give up on that level. They won't be able even to develop some liking for that person. They will kind of hate them in some way. So hatred will be there and fear will be there in a consciousness of a materialist, while the devotee is free of hatred and free of fear completely. Now this is transcendental plane, and also it's free of envy. The devotees are free of envy. Krishna, I was giving the other day an example. So it's very easy to understand that Krishna can be free of envy, because Krishna is in possession of everything. So envious person is someone who lacks something that someone else has. So now Krishna doesn't lack anything. He's got everything we have, and unlimitedly. So how can Krishna envy any one of us? He's completely free of envy. He's the source of all of us and source of everything. But that is still an easy concept to understand, because Krishna has everything. But if you look at Krishna's devotees, some of them, I gave the example of Kolavecha Shridhar, he didn't even have anything, and still he never had envy. That is mind-blowing. Can you understand that? He didn't have anything. He's not like Krishna to be Swayam Bhagavan, to be free of envy. He didn't have anything. He was selling banana leaves and he was completely free of envy. So this is the transcendental nature of the devotees, the transcendental position that they have in connection with Krishna. And this is actually completely contrary to the material plane, completely incompatible with the material reality. Therefore, this is why there is value to hear about Krishna and to hear about the devotees. Because if we hear about Krishna and the devotees, we will become liberated from confusion, from illusion. We will see reality as it is. We will understand there is a transcendental world. We will want to go there if we meet them. Otherwise, if we don't meet the devotees, we may think this is it. Like Dr. Frog, you know, he thought this, my well is everything and there is nothing beyond my well. Like that. So therefore, it is extremely valuable that we hear topics about Krishna. And now another aspect of this purport is, and of course of the whole this discussion, is that the question was raised, why some political or sociological topics have been brought in into the Bhagavatam. You know, what's the value of hearing, you know, all this political turmoil that is going on, and who did what, and, you know, all it sounds like a gossip almost. But Prabhupada is explaining here that anything that is connected to Krishna, it becomes transcendental. Again, this philosophical stone, the touchstone, when you put it in contact with Krishna, it becomes immediately transcendental. So all these Mahabharata pastimes or activities full of sociology, economics, that are not directly related apparently related to the goal of life, if one examines them very carefully, they are very practical, pointing to the goal of life. They are not just extraneous like a newspaper type of information that is meant to just entertain you or to keep you updated about the illusions of this world. These so economics, sociology and politics that are there within Shastra, or in fact you can even see the newspapers in that light if you connect them with Krishna, and you can learn something about how to serve Krishna and how to execute the mission that we are supposed to be executing as members of ISKCON. So in this way, anything that is not obstructing our relationship with Krishna is valuable, is transcendental, is beneficial, is worth hearing, so that we know how to serve the people better. We understand their mentality. Devamrita Maharaj told us recently in New Zealand, I think was it. He said when Prabhupada went to the US, he used to go into the bookstores and he used to read the Karmis books, whatever they are in the bookstore, libraries, whatever. He used to go there for 1 year while he was still trying to figure it out how to start ISKCON. He used to go in the bookstore and he'll open the latest books and see what are the Karmis preaching about and what are their teachings. Because he wanted to understand the mentality of the American people so that he could find a way to relate to them. So in that way, even sometimes reading a mundane book can help us understand how to serve Krishna better. But of course that requires maturity. So it is advised that first we study very well the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, all Prabhupada's books, and before we embark upon studying what other philosophers or scholars or whatever sociologists are writing, we have to have a very good grip of Prabhupada's teachings, very good understanding, so that we know, we put everything into context, and we could use even these mundane topics for spiritual purpose, to how to help and serve others and get them out of the illusion. Because they are thinking that the philosopher's stone is perhaps karma. The more I work, the more I'll become satisfied. Some others are thinking it's just to chill out and not even work and just hang out there and see what happens. So there are different perspectives that are there about what is the goal, what is the goal of life. But Prabhupada's teachings are very clear that the source of everything is a person. He has multifarious energies, and therefore you are now disconnected from that person. So the purpose of life is to reconnect, to perform yoga. Yoga means relationship. It's amazing, so many yoga studios are there. People are performing yoga, but no one is trying to relate to the source of everything. You know, it's like yoga, which is actually the way people do yoga today, not saying the devotees when they do yoga to preach, that is again transcendental, but the ordinary people who just go for exercise, that is actually bhoga, it's not yoga. Because they're enjoying their senses. They're not interested to relate to the philosophical stone, you know, philosopher's stone, to the perpetuum mobile, to the source of everything. Krishna is perpetuum mobile. All the scientists are trying to find the perpetuum mobile. What is the powerful thing that when we find it, we will get all the energy, all the power, eternally, constantly coming forward. You know, what is it? They want to catch Krishna without seeing Krishna, without wanting to love Krishna. They want to exploit Krishna, therefore they cannot see. You see? So even if people go to do yoga, they are not relating to Krishna. They are in fact covering themselves even more, because they are becoming completely misled, unless they actually meet some devotees to explain to them that the purpose of yoga is not for sense gratification on a gross level, and the purpose of yoga is not for impersonalism on a subtle level. You can never become one with everything by performing karma, because in karma you have friends and enemies. How can you be one with everything if you have enemies? You understand? It's not possible. And if you perform yoga to become impersonally connected, become one with everything, you still cannot be one, because your conception of oneness is merging with everything and merging with the complete whole. You cannot achieve oneness in that way, because the ego, the false ego, the envy is still there. Because merging with the complete whole for them means that I am that, I am it. What was it? Tat Tamasi. Yeah, I am it. So that is envy. And to identify yourself with the whole, that is envy. So how can you be one with the whole? You cannot. If you have envy, you cannot. In fact, you are thinking that you are the whole. You are a criminal. That's all. If you have a business and I come to work for you in the business, and one day I rock up in your office and I say, this is my business, I am one with it, what will you think? You think this guy is a criminal, put him in jail. So oneness is only attained through devotional service. We are the perfect monists. It's explained in the first canto. The devotees are the perfect monists. Monism means oneness. How can we be monists? Because we understand that monism means oneness, means that I am one while I am serving and loving the source of everything, because I am part of that source. So when you serve and love, that is your function, then you become one. It's like if you, even a mundane example, if you go to a company, if the worker is doing his service very nicely in the company, then he is considered to be one with the company. He is one, but at the same time he is performing a specific function. He is not the whole company. Like that. Do you understand this example? So similarly, we, by serving the supreme source of everything, Lord Krishna, automatically we become one with Krishna, because we are now performing the service, the function of Krishna. So in one sense we are one with Krishna, but in another sense we are an individual within the oneness. This is Mahaprabhu's revelation, Achinta Vera Vera Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. So by hearing Bhagavatam, by meeting devotees, we can understand what is the essence, what is the philosopher's stone that everyone is trying to find. Is it the, you know, the Holy Grail or something like that people are looking for? What is it that is going to make my life perfect? Perpetuum mobile, and so on and so forth. The real perpetuum mobile, the real Holy Grail is Krishna. And also when we come to Krishna, we shouldn't think that I'm going to come to Krishna, I'm going to hook up with him now, you know, and I'll see how he's going to make me happy. Devamrita Maharaj said this is a mundane consciousness. Sometimes devotees say, devotees think, neophyte on neophyte level, we think like this. I've tried to love so many people and everyone disappointed me, everyone hurt me. Now I'm going to give Krishna a shot and see if he's going to please me. If he doesn't please me, then I'll know he doesn't exist. Do you understand? This is a big problem. So Maharaj was saying, we don't approach Krishna with that mentality that I want to see whether you're going to please me. This is not bhakti. Bhakti means we approach Krishna simply to see how we can please Krishna, without considering whether we're going to receive some kind of happiness or not. We just try to serve him. This is the called faith, you know. On the initial stage, when we make the first steps in devotional service, we kind of feel, by reading Prabhupada's books, yes, I can feel Krishna is there. Let me just serve him. Let me just serve him and forget about anything. And because we are serving like this, Krishna is giving us some transcendental pleasure, happiness, and then we realize, okay, there is something happening here. And in that way we recognize Krishna is there, he's reciprocating with us. But after some time Krishna may stop that transcendental ecstasy just to test us. Why? What is your motive? Is it, you know, materialistic interest? Do you want to use me as a happiness pill or something like that? You know, Krishna wants to test us like that. Or are you really interested in pleasing me and understanding your function as part of the whole? So when you understand your function as part of the whole, as part of the summum bonum, the servant, then automatically you become detached from any kind of returns. And then when you become detached from the returns, then you get all the returns. This is the secret. This is the secret of the secret of the secret. You know, and that is the most mystical thing in life. People don't understand. They write millions of books about how to be successful in this world, how to be happy, and how to have a life of fulfillment, and so on and so forth. Positive thinking and this and that. Lumosity now, with the new brain studies, how to train your brain to perform more and to achieve more. All these things, without really understanding the essence, the source of life, are just Shravahi, how's that verse?
Shravahi Eva Kevalam. Yeah, exactly. It is just useless labor.
So here, what is the use of topics that simply waste one's
valuable life?
So in conclusion, all of us, we are given this greatest opportunity to understand very philosophically, very scientifically, very deeply our position in this universe, our position in the cosmos and in transcendental reality. And we've been given all the tools to revive our original consciousness, chanting the holy name, studying the Bhagavatam, residing in the holy place, worshipping the deity, all the different aspects, performing kirtan, and different aspects of bhakti. These are the different methods for revival of this original consciousness of pure love, transcendental consciousness. Therefore, this is the most, the greatest way to utilize our time. By constantly thinking of Krishna, constantly absorbing ourselves in Krishna consciousness, and constantly seeing how everything is related to Krishna. Seeing Krishna everywhere. Even the most mundane politics or something, or economics, we can actually perceive Krishna the more we progress. We would know how to use that information to please Krishna and to benefit others. This is called transcendental consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes, Mahatma Prabhu.
Do you want to tell us something about Ramanujacharya, how he dealt with Krishna consciousness?
He's on a mission. Sripatra Ramanujacharya ki. Well, Ramanujacharya was the founder of the Lakshmi Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya. He lived in South India today, what we know as South India. For a considerable amount of time, he spent in Srirangam. Ramanujacharya was disciple of Yamuna Acharya, as far as I remember, and he became very great preacher, and because of his preaching, there was one king who was actually Shaivite, a follower of Lord Shiva. He became very much disturbed because of Ramanuja's preaching. He thought that this man is converting everyone into Vaishnavism and my day is coming also. So if I don't do something, I'll be finished. So he devised a plan. He sent a messenger to Ramanuja and he told him, "I want to challenge you. Come to my palace. I want to challenge you in a philosophical contest, and I want to see how powerful you are." But he was plotting that when Ramanuja appears, if we defeat him, then it's great. But if we can't defeat him, then we have to kill him. This is the only way we can get free of this rascal. He was thinking like that. So his disciple, two disciples, one was Kuresh and the other one, I can't remember, something with Maha, something, Mahapurna, Kuresh. They heard that there was a plot against Ramanuja. So they went to him out of love for their guru, and they said, "Here is an example of devotees ready to risk their life for no mundane benefit." They went to him and they said, "Guru Maharaj, can we go instead of you? We'll dress like you, and then we can try to take this contest. And if they want to kill us, then at least you'll be alright." Someone may say the soldiers, they also go to battle ready to give their life. But if you don't give them a big fat salary, nobody will go. It's a fact. So it's different. It's not the same. So basically people are motivated by material rewards. But Quraysh and Mahapurna were not motivated by any material rewards. They just wanted to serve their guru. So Ramanuja was quite elderly at that time as well. So he considered very carefully and he thought, alright, they are so eager to serve me in that way, let them go. Let them perform this service. So they dressed appropriately and Quraysh dressed like his guru, and then Mahapurna was like an assistant. So they went, both of them, into the palace of this king. And his own gurus, they came, and there was like this debate, philosophical debate, whether Vishnu or Shiva is the Supreme Lord. They defeated Ramanuja's disciples defeated the gurus of this king. And then the king immediately gave them a sign, you just finish them off. So what they did, they caught them and they blinded them, both of them. And they escaped somehow. But they were blinded, both of them. And later on, this Mahapurna, the elderly man, he died, he left his body. But Quraysh remained blind, so he went back to his guru. And Ramanuja Acharya told him that he is very grateful for his service, and he told him, if you go to this deity, there is a special deity, Vardaraj, yes. If you go to this deity and you pray, he will give you your eyesight back. But he refused. He said, no, I should not ask the Lord for anything. Can you believe this is the consciousness of a devotee? I cannot ask the Lord for anything material. He was prepared to stay blind, but not to go and beg the Lord to restore his eyesight. But then Ramanuja Acharya begged him again and again. So ultimately he said, because my guru is asking him, I'll go and do that. Out of love for his guru. So he went and approached the deity and he begged for his blessings, and then he got his eyesight back by the mercy of the Lord. There is another pastime of Ramanuja Acharya. One time he was with his disciples by the seashore, and he was throwing he threw some of his remnants in the sea, and some fish ate it, and in front of the disciples' eyes the fish revived its original transcendental form and went back to Godhead in front of them, and the disciples were bewildered. And they asked him, Guru Maharaj, we are taking your remnants every day, why are we not going back to Godhead? And he said, because this fish is innocent, you are all offensive. Ramanuja actually also fundraised for some huge temple. It wasn't so huge. He also built a temple in South India somewhere. I can't remember exactly which one. But he fundraised, he went around for some time, considerable amount of time, and he built one temple. I don't know if he's connected to Srirangam. I think it is. Maybe it is. He established Vaishnavism, and he drove away impersonalism at that time from India, which was swallowed by the preaching of Shankaracharya. So Ramanuja Acharya is some of his descendants there, like the 12 Alvars. They were from the Sri Sampradaya, King Kulashekar. They all wrote poetry, and they had books
written about the glories of the Lord. So they were great preachers, great devotees. So Ramanujacharya is accepted to be one of the most important founder acharyas in this world, being the leader of the Sri Sampradaya for this particular time. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he built one temple in Mayapur, where you have the four sampradayas, the acharyas of the four sampradayas there in the four different corners: Madhava Acharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka Swami, and Ramanuja Acharya. So to this day, Ramanuja is worshipped all over the world as a pure devotee of the Lord, who appeared to bring transcendental personalism. Can't remember exactly, he preached maybe Dvaita Vedanta, Vishishta Dvaita, pure dualism. He was propagating that basically the soul and the source of everything are different, and the way to relate is bhakti. So he was a pure devotee of the Lord. I have read the whole life of Ramanuja. There are so many stories, and some of them are quite intricate, so I've forgotten some of the details. Yeah, nothing else comes clearly to mind, but there are some pretty amazing stories concerning him. You can see many times they made attempts to assassinate him. Even from a young age, there was some kind of attempts to assassinate him because he was so pure and so knowledgeable. I think he was married at some point, but his wife insulted his guru 3 times and he left his wife. That is another aspect of his life. She insulted his guru 3 times, offended him, and then he just decided, this is it, I'm taking sannyas. So yeah, very great personality. I think yesterday was Madhavacharya's appearance day. Yesterday, yeah. So very auspicious to pray for the blessings and the mercy of these great acharyas, so that we could really, really make it in this lifetime. I was just thinking even this morning, I don't want to come back to this material world. Thank you very much. At least to come back is an enjoy. I don't want it. It's horrible. So I was praying to Krishna, Krishna, please, you know, I don't want to come back to this world anymore. I've seen it all. Thank you very much. This morning during japa, this was my meditation. So I'm praying that we all come to this grips with this reality, and we just take this opportunity and not only go back to Gaudiya, go back to Vrindavan, the topmost realm, become eternally connected in serving Radha and Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Nanti Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Gaura Premanandi, Nanti Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Jai.